Hello, and welcome to the Reform Party podcast. I should warn you that today has got a bit of a local flavour to it, so I just flag that up. There are some things we'll talk about which have got wider interest, but it is quite specifically related to the Wirral. With the concentration that we've had over the last 2 weeks on leadership and so on, I think it would be nice to start and talk about what's going on in the 400 or so branches up and down the country at grassroots level. And that's what we're going to do today. The bits which might be of more interest is that later on we're going to talk about the impact, the potential impact of the current planning and infrastructure bill, which 24 hours ago got its second reading. So we'll have a chat about that. But before, without further ado, let me introduce my guest today, Mr. Les Spencer. Hello, Les.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to start off just by introducing yourself, who you are, what you've done in your life?
Yes, I can do that. I live on the Wirral at the moment. I've lived on the Wirral for nearly 40 years, although I don't come from the Wirral, I come from Liverpool. Moved around the UK quite a lot, lived in Kendal, lived in Carlisle, lived in Gateshead, I've lived in Durham, I've lived in Edinburgh, and currently reside in Sorghum Massey Village on the Wirral. Occupationally, I've been involved principally in financial services of one kind or another, financing assets for business users, trucks, computers, engineering equipment, also...
Leasing, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Also some domestic finance as well.
Right. And are you still currently working? Or?
No, I'm retired now.
Right. Let's talk about your political background, because I know that a little bit about that. Am I right in saying that you're formerly a Conservative?
Yes, I've been a member of the Conservative Party up until last year, for probably nigh on 25 years.
And tell me, what made you change? Because I should have introduced you. You are, in fact, the Secretary of the Wirral constituency for Reform UK.
Yeah.
What made you move to Reform?
I came to the conclusion, really, that the Conservative Party, a bit like the Labour Party, had lost the power to govern the country. There were fundamental things that needed doing. There was lots of talk, but little action. I mean, I was president of Wallasey Conservative Association for a number of years. I was also a councillor for the Conservative Party back in the early 2000s. But it became apparent nationally in particular that the party talked a good talk but didn't deliver.
Mm. Well, I don't think anybody would argue with that.
No.
So as well as being the secretary of the branch, you're also in charge of recruitment, is that correct?
It is, yes. I've been pleasantly surprised by the amount of interest in people wanting to stand as councillors, because that's not my experience in the past.
Right.
When I was involved with the Conservative Party on similar things, it was always difficult to get candidates of the right calibre. There's a groundswell of support for reform and a high expectation of what reform is going to be able to deliver locally and nationally. And where we stand today, I've interviewed probably 40 potential people as candidates, of which I've approved about 35. There have been five or six that didn't really fit our profile. So I had to advise them that they were unsuccessful.
So what sort of people are these? What are their backgrounds?
Probably about a third of them, 30 to 40% of them come from a self-employed background.
Right.
They've either been self-employed or they are self-employed in a small capacity or a medium-sized capacity, or in one case, we have an employer with 100 members of staff. High-caliber people. We've got nurses, we've got doctors, we've got ministers. Quite a lot of people of the Christian faith, from evangelicals to Catholics to Church of England, people who are involved in church organisations. We sometimes get categorised as being sort of knuckle-dragging racist thugs, which is very far from who we are. But yeah, lots of really good calibre people. Accountants, solicitors, petrol pump attendants, taxi drivers, nurses, all manner of people, but really high caliber, well motivated people. It's been a pleasure to meet them, to be honest.
That's interesting what you were saying about religious people, because I've noticed this too, that there is a strong Christian group within Reform.
There is. I had a conversation with one who's high up in his church last week, and I asked him that question, you know, why are so many Christians of various denominations coming towards Reform locally? I don't know whether it's a national trend or just purely local. And he basically said there are so many cultural challenges out there at the moment, largely surrounding immigration and the consequences of immigration, that the Christian churches are concerned that their position within UK society is being undermined or threatened or at least challenged by the influx of people with different religious denominations and different cultures. And who can deny it?
Mm. I should probably have explained what we're doing on the Wirral, because the Wirral's a little unusual in that we haven't got any local elections coming up this year. In fact, we've not got any more local elections until 2027, when all of the seats come up all at one go.
Yeah.
So our strategy, our plan, is to have in place by that time, and certainly sooner than that, as soon as we can get them, 66 candidates who will all then be put forward for election to the council. And again, our plan is not to win some seats in the council. Our plan is to win sufficient seats in the council to have control of the council.
Yeah.
Now, when that was first mooted, there were quite a few people who were very sceptical about the possibility of doing that. But I looked at electoral calculus the other day for a local authority in Lincolnshire, and they had gone from zero Reform candidates to being predicted to have over 70 candidates and having control of the council. And the same, another one I looked at in Stockport, I think it was, which was the same. Mm. So this plan that we've got can be achieved.
I think it can. I mean, if you look at the groundswell of support locally on the Wirral, I mean, we've got somewhere in the region of about 2,000 people who are either members or alternatively active helpers. I don't think there's a political party on the Wirral with that kind of support at the present time. And it's a body of support that increases by the day. We're getting multiple numbers of applications for membership daily. I'm getting applications, not quite daily, but I'm certainly getting several every week from people who are inquiring about being a candidate and what's involved and can I come for an interview. I probably should say that Reform have had some bad publicity in recent years on the selection of its candidates, and that we in the Wirral have gone out of our way to do things a little bit more professionally. So when anybody expresses an interest in being a candidate, instead of going onto the national website and just applying directly there and being vetted and having to wait for a decision from them, we're having interviews ourselves. We're pre-vetting people locally. We don't want any candidate that we don't know.
Mm.
So I'm interviewing every single candidate for half an hour. And then they have to attend various public meetings or private political meetings within the Reform organisation, so that we get to know what makes these people tick, and we tell them what we expect from them, and they share their political views, their social views, so that we know that we haven't got any fruitcakes representing Reform on the Wirral.
Mm.
And that seems to be working quite well.
I think you're probably right. I mean, the problem is there's only so much that you can do national vetting.
Yeah.
So you can get a name, you can go through their social media and try and work out something about what they're about. But it's fairly rudimentary.
But I know where they live, and I can I can look them in the eye, and I know what the local issues are. So myself and the other guy that gets involved in this, we can question the motives of a potential candidate much more accurately than anybody in head office can.
Mm, I agree. We're going to go on to talk about the local plan for the Wirral, and we're going to. But before doing that, could we just talk a little bit about the council itself? And you, as an ex-councillor, probably have some inside info on this. Talk me through Wirral Borough Council, because I can't get my head around it.
Well, it was 2004, I think, when I ceased being a councillor. So I'm a little bit out of date in some of the operational sides of it. But it's probably not too dissimilar to many other councils. But it's dysfunctional, in a word.
Well, that's what I said at the start. Although this is a local discussion, it's going to be relevant to everybody because, in my experience, they're all the same.
Yeah, yeah, they are. I mean, we've got a problem, and I think that most councillors and most senior officers in the councils are not aware of the kind of social and demographic and cultural and political and economic changes that are going on within the constituency of Wirral Borough Council. There's major demographic changes happening, and most councillors seem to be unaware of them. And I found that really quite concerning.
Mm. And I mean, I said that all councils are the same, but in actual fact, I withdraw that because actually I think we have one of the worst.
We have.
Would that be fair?
Yeah. Wirral Borough Council is effectively bankrupt. It has no money. It has no reserves. Mm. The only reason it continues to avoid being taken over by the government is through emergency grants that have been offered it over the last couple of years.
Sorry, these are not grants though, are they? These are loans.
I think it's a mixture of grants and loans, but they're certainly heavily indebted to international banks.
I think what you'll find is that most of the grants are for specific purposes.
They are.
In other words, a lot of them are related to things like net zero and equality and all sorts of things that national government are wanting to push.
Yeah.
So if there's some particular thing that they want to push like that, they will offer a grant to the council for do it. But that money is then ring-fenced and can only be used for that specific purpose.
Yeah.
But in the case of a few weeks ago, when effectively WBC ran out of money, they had to go and get an emergency loan from the government. Now, I looked at the terms of that loan, and my granddaughter will be paying it off.
Yeah,
it's 50 years.
Yeah,
you know, it's just saddling ourselves. And this seems to have been happening. I looked at there was a report. I think you sent me
SIPFAS.
Yeah, talk me through that because that was from 2021, I think, wasn't it?
But it was a sort of forward-looking report on the short to medium-term funding difficulties of Wirral Borough Council and the structural weaknesses that existed. And the independent people that run that report were damning of the poor levels of cooperation between the political class and the management class of Wirral Borough Council. There was a clear belief that there was decisions getting made for political expediency but with no economic prudence. And it was really very, very critical of them all, the councillor class and the management class within Wirral Borough Council. And they pointed out that it's been like that for a few years. Mm. And despite previous reports, they'd not addressed any of the problems.
And the funny thing was that having been written in 2021, and you now look at where the council are, and it was like a prediction. Everything that they had said, nothing had changed.
Well, they've just had Grant Thornton ripping them to pieces as independent auditors making recommendations this year. Mm. And Grant Thornton made the same observations and the same criticisms of the SIPFAS report of a few years ago.
That's right, it was like looking in a mirror.
And then the changes, the budgetary changes that are coming through, they go nowhere towards addressing the financial difficulties that the council's going to face. It comes out with a budget every year, and by about 3 or 4 months into the year, it's then putting its hands up and saying, well, we're not going to achieve this budget. We're heading for another deficit. And then, of course, they're getting involved in discussions with central government then as to how to meet these deficit problems. I mean, the latest thing was they made 200 redundancies. Well, they've got a staff of about 3,500 people. 200 redundancies is just pathetic.
Yeah, it's not going to start, is it?
No. No.
And it's as if they don't see the fact that they're not going to meet their budgets in almost any department. And but it's as if they can't see it coming. There's no, doesn't seem to be any real financial controls on the spending at all. I mean, I was looking at, I mean, the two areas I think which they say takes most of the money are on child services and adult social care. Now, it was in the Echo the other day that there's one child with special educational needs. And that one child is costing the council £600,000 a year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's unsustainable.
Yeah. I mean, these are statutory services that they have to provide, but they need to provide them economically and efficiently, and they don't do that. They don't seem to benchmark themselves against some of the really good councils in the country. And every council's got the same kind of responsibilities.
Mm, that's right.
And some administer those responsibilities well, and some don't. And Wirral doesn't. It just wastes vast amounts of money. There's no commercial sense at all. We've looked at the makeup of the council, particularly the Labour benches. And there's hardly anybody who's got any business experience. Mm. They've all worked in local government. They've all worked in the civil service. They've all worked for the government in one capacity or another. Hardly any of them actually run a business. So the kind of disciplines that you might need to run a big budget are not there in the town hall.
Yeah, and the quality of the officials. I mean, I think it goes back to if you were a bright young accountant who just qualified, would you go into the local council for a job?
No. Well, you might now, because they get paid ridiculous sums of money and their pensions are just off the Richter scale. In fact, pensions, I would like to illuminate.
Oh, carry on with that, yeah.
On the pensions that Wirralborough Council employees enjoy. You know, at a time of great financial crisis, the Wirralborough Council, supported by the councillors, have decided that they are going to contribute 25% of all our council tax monies to the benefit of the pension scheme of the Wirralborough Council staff. 25% of all our council taxes that get paid are going straight into the pension fund at a time of great financial crisis. It's just lunacy. You know, generally speaking, an employer's contribution in pension schemes is normally about 5, 6, 7%. How do you justify 25%? And that's coming straight out of our taxes.
So what sort of pensions are these people ending up with?
These people are on pensions that are about, on average about four times what anybody in the private sector gets who earns the same kind of money.
Unbelievable.
It's nuts.
Just going back to the child services again. Yeah. It seems to me that one of the things that, okay, the government put a statutory responsibility on councils to carry out, and the main driver at the moment seems to be dealing with children who have got special educational needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it seems to me that in an area such as particularly East Wirral, which is fairly deprived, then all of the people who are living in there who are on some kind of benefits get extra money by having the child diagnosed as having special educational needs.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very powerful driver. If you're on universal credit and you can get extra cash if you can suggest that your child has got autism or ADHD or whatever, then you're going to want to do it, aren't you?
Well, if I, as a local politician, went out there and said, all the children who live in Bidston, all the children who live in Birkenhead or Rock Ferry or Seacombe or wherever it is, which are the poorer areas of the world, if I suggested that they had some kind of behavioural propensity or some intellectual lack of capacity, etc., I would get crucified.
And rightly so.
No, I'm not suggesting that they do have these deficiencies. I go the other way, and I think these kids are potentially the same as every other kid out there. But the evidence would suggest differently. In a lot of schools now on the Wirral, 40 to 50% of these kids are viewed as in need of special needs. Now, I don't believe that.
No.
I just do not believe that. So you've got to ask yourself your question, what is going on here? Is this...
And it's the consequences for the finances I'm talking about as well. I mean, I know just up the road from me, there's a guy and he's got a child who's picked up every single morning by a taxi,
yeah,
to be taken to school, and then later on in the day is dropped off by the taxi. This guy is an affluent area. He's got a nice house. He's got a Range Rover sat in the drive that never leaves it. Now, does that make any sense?
No, it doesn't. And it should be stamped on. And it's just weak management on the part of the local authority.
Yep.
But on that particular issue, there are some schools on the Wirral, I'm told by people I know who are governors, where up to 50% of the children, children who are very young, either infants, junior school, who have managed, although their parents have managed to get them classified as being statemented and having behavioural difficulties. And it's got so bad that the parents in some schools are queuing up to get their kids registered like this. Now, there's an entry point into the benefit system, and which I think is it's wholly wrong that you should be using children or introducing children to benefit dependency at such young ages. There are websites out there which prompt people to apply to have their children statemented, and it tells you what to say and how to say it so that you can open the door to greater benefits. But one thing that strikes me is that if a child is identified as in need of special attention, their behaviour is becoming medicalised.
That's right.
And the moment it gets medicalised, somebody wants to feed them some medicine. Now, I was talking to a teacher last week, and she said, "Yeah, I know all about that." She said, "I call it zombification." I said, "What do you mean?" So she said, "Well, they get medicated and their behaviour changes. And in the main, it slows them down. They're not their true selves anymore. Now, if that is happening, and I'm not saying it is, but the evidence seems to suggest that it might be going on, then Wirral Borough Council and the NHS generally, they need to get hold of this, because we can't have young children get medicated just to get through the benefit system.
No, and I mean, it shows that it probably is happening, because when you look at the numbers of young unemployed people who are not in training or not in education, not in work, the figures are massive.
Yeah.
So you're having people who are going from one cycle to the other, and never, particularly if they're being put on medication, they're never going to break that.
No.
Can we go on to talk about the local plan which has come out? Now, I got the impression that I got saw something go past on an email that the local plan has now been signed off by the inspectorate. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And what the local plan basically says is that on the east of Wirral, which is the Merseyside, which is the more deprived area compared to the west of Wirral, which is rural and so on, that the all of the housing is going to be built on the east side, and that on the west side, where there was some threat to build houses on what was Greenbelt, and which has caused all sorts of consternation in Wirral West, that has now been, in this plan as signed off by the inspectors, that has been shelved. Is that correct?
Yeah, more or less. It's a brownfield only policy.
And so did I get the impression that there was a sort of sharp exhalation of breath from the people in Wirral West who said, "Oh, well, that's all right. If they're not going to build in our Greenbelt, I don't care what they do."
I wouldn't say they don't care in any way what happens, but certainly it has been the dominant political issue over the last few years, and one that on occasions I've campaigned on behalf of.
You're chairman of the Conservation Village?
Sorghum Massey Village Conservation Society. Yeah, I mean, we had an issue with the fire brigade. Not everybody has issues with the fire brigade, but anyway, we had issues with the fire brigade building a new station in Sorghum Massey on Greenbelt. Which did get built, despite all our objections. But the Green Belt is a sort of sacrosanct issue in the west of Wirral, and all the building, the forecasted building, which is 14,000 houses over about the next 15 years, that's all apparently going to take place in Birkenhead.
East of the motorway. But it's smoke and mirrors, Les, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, and I know. It's never going to happen. The estimated cost of the public subsidy to build on these brownfield sites is £1 billion.
Yeah.
As we just discussed a minute ago, Wirral Borough Council doesn't have £1 billion.
No.
Or anything like it. So practically, what they're doing is they're creating a plan. Oh, yes, we'll build on all these brownfield sites. But no developer is going to want to do it because they can't make any money at it.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's certain types of houses you can build on certain types of sites. So if you wanted to build £500,000 sites, then you're probably not going to build them in Birkenhead.
No. So what's the point of producing a plan? And I mean, I've read the plan from cover to cover, and it's obviously been a very expensive document to produce.
Yeah.
And it's gone to the planning inspectorate, who've spent a lot of time going through it all and fine-tuning it and so on. But everybody knows it's never going to happen. What's the point?
Well, there's not even a housing crisis on the Wirral. I mean, there are about 6,000 people apparently on a housing list, but there are about 4,500 houses that are empty, that are in need of some modernisation. So it wouldn't be beyond the wit of Wirral Borough Council to focus its attentions on those houses which are where people aren't living at the moment, spruce those up, and more or less, quite quickly anyway, any housing issues could be alleviated quite quickly. We don't need building on the scale that they're talking about. I mean, they were talking about building 35,000. 35,000.
I'll come on to that in a minute.
Houses. Wirral Borough Council, with the Conservative Party and the sort of cross-party support, 2 or 3 years ago came up with a figure of 7,000 houses, and various demographers, separate from the council and separate from the political parties, said that, yeah, okay, 7,000 houses over a period of about 15 years might be about right, would certainly give enough room for housing growth. And then last year, the Labour government came along and said, oh no, 7,500 houses isn't enough. We need 35,000 houses. Nobody knows where this 35,000 houses has come from. If you look at all the demographic groups where there's population growth, there is no population growth. The only growth is in the immigrant community.
Well, I mean, the looking at the demographics, I was shocked to see that there were actually more people living in the Wirral in 2060 than there currently are. So yeah, we've actually lost people since 2060.
We've lost 40,000 people since
1960. Yeah. So there is no great demand. It's not as if there's a lot of industry or jobs in the world whereby we need to have houses for people to come in and take these jobs up.
There are 75 jobs for every 100 people of working age on the Wirral.
Mm.
So there's a structural level of unemployment right away.
Yeah.
And the only way it can be alleviated is if people travel out of the Wirral and they go and work somewhere else, because that's where the jobs are. They're down in Chester, they're on Deeside, they're in Warrington, they're in Liverpool, they're in Widnes, but they're not on the Wirral.
Mm.
Now, if you're earning £40,000-£50,000, yes, you'll travel to Runcorn or Cheshire or wherever it is for gainful employment. It's clearly worth your while.
Mm.
But the vast majority of people who live on the Wirral, particularly live in Birkenhead, are not earning big money. They're traditional low-earning people. They may be earning £20,000 a year. Now, if you're only earning that kind of money, you won't spend it commuting to Chester or Manchester or the other side of Liverpool. So there's a structural disadvantage in the employment market on the Wirral people who are on average wages or below average wages. There isn't the opportunities for them anymore. Mm. I mean, the business community is in retreat on the Wirral. Since COVID came along, the numbers of VAT-registered private enterprise businesses on the Wirral has dropped by 6%. We've got the lowest amount of business recovery of almost any council at all in the Northwest, and we're amongst the poorest performance of business recovery of all councils in the whole of England. So it's just unraveling. We've got low job opportunities. We've got, you know, can you think of a big business that's come to the Wirral in the last 10 years? I can't think of any.
I can tell you a few that have closed.
Yeah, there's plenty that have closed. So we've got a shrinking business community. We've got a brain drain of capable people. I mean, the birth rate is half what it was 20 years ago. The death rate is twice what the birth rate is. And we've lost 40,000 people since 1960. every community, if it's going to thrive economically, has to have a hard core of people with entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm.
And there aren't a lot of those kind of people out there, but they do exist. But the ones that exist in Wirral leave.
Of course they do.
You know, those families that run businesses, they send their kids away to university, they get degrees in whatever, and they don't come back.
No, that's a pattern, mind you, in a lot of places around the country.
It is, but you know what you lose, you gain. But it doesn't work that way on a Wirral. What you lose, you lose.
Well, we've no major university, or no. And I think that's to our detriment in terms of being able to, because the Wirral's a lovely place to live.
Yeah.
But it's to our detriment that we don't have any kind of major educational institution that people will come to and then find that this is a great place to live and then stay.
Well, people tend to, you've just illuminated what I'm going to say. People have sort of rose-tinted glasses about what a wonderful place the Wirral is and how it's full of posh people living good lives in expensive houses and such like. And there are elements of that. But the vast majority of people who live in the Wirral are quite poorly off. They're unemployed, they're welfare dependent, they don't have a particularly good standard of living. I mean, you take Birkenhead, for instance. I mean, 49% of all the people of working age in Birkenhead don't work.
And on average, they live 11 years less than the people in Wirral West.
Yeah. When you look at long-term sickness benefit, the Wirral is three times what the national average is. Vast numbers of people are on housing benefits, on council tax benefits, sickness benefits. Benefits keep the Wirral society going. And the council's the same. The council's benefit dependent. It can't fund itself. It's got low receipts of council taxes coming in. It's got low receipts of business rates coming in. It's just lunacy, yeah. the whole thing. Nothing works economically. It's all propped up on benefits. It's either grants or loans to the council, or it's welfare to a large section of the population.
Yeah, and going back to the demographics, the vast majority of the people in the world are there's a higher than average over 65.
Yeah, I think it's 26% of the population are over 65, and it's something like 10% of the population is over 90.
Yeah. So, being brutal about it, these people over the next 20 years are going to die off.
They should do, and should alleviate the housing crisis.
And with the current birth rate we've got, they're not going to be replaced. They're not by youngsters.
We're in a bit of a doom loop as far as population.
So why do we need 14,500 new houses in the current Wirral plan?
We definitely don't. I mean, the best I've heard is that the demographers say we might need 7,000.
Right.
But so we've got double that. Who's going to live in them?
But I mean, what I said earlier, I don't think that expensive local plan was worth the paper it was written on, because as I say, I think in terms of the economics, it will never happen.
No.
We haven't got £1 billion to subsidise to clear out all these brownfield sites.
There aren't the number of skilled people to build them.
So the other thing about it, though, is that plan was instigated, again, going back to, I think, 2021, which was to fit in with the government's planning strategy for national planning strategy, which was came out in 2021.
Yeah.
So that's us just finished it. But it's been superseded. It wasn't that, again, not only was it not worth the paper it was written on, it's no longer viable, because what's coming along now, I just mentioned earlier, yesterday we had the second reading of the Planning and Infrastructure Bill. And that changes all the goalposts again.
Well, in Wirral's case, I mean, every local authority has been encouraged for a number of years to produce a local plan. You know, what land have you got? What are you going to build on it? When are you going to build? How many houses are you going to build, etc.? It's taken Wirral Council 15 years to get to where they are now. They should have had this done 12, 13, 14 years ago. And as you rightly point out, events are overtaking it.
But the Planning and Infrastructure Bill, as I understand it, is going to make all of that irrelevant, because it will no longer be the council's responsibility to set the planning agenda locally. It will be done by planning officers, in inverted commas, who are appointed by the government. And they, so therefore, effectively, the local people, local, you know, when we take over the council and whatever it is, we will not have the ability to stop development.
You sound as though you know a bit more about this than I do. So I'm not fully up to date with anything, but I think you're right in broad terms, yeah.
Well, what the legislation says is that the local authority no longer has the power or responsibility to set a local plan.
Yeah.
That the local plan will be set from nationally and will be implemented by planning officers who are appointed by the government. So effectively, you just ride roughshod over all local opinion in terms of what goes on, and they'll do what they like. And as you say, the plan for Wirral, as I saw it, was for 35,000 new houses, which would take the population. Well, you'll tell me that you know more about this than I do. What's the population of Wirral just now?
It was amounting to an increase of around about 35% of the population.
I think it's 320,000 that we've got.
Yeah.
Now, again, 35,000 new households is another 100,000 people.
Yeah, it's a it almost looked like social engineering with some political background as well, because as I said before, there's no growth in births. There's an increasingly shrinking amount of people of an age to bring children in, and we've got a massive growth of elderly people out there. There isn't any demand for that scale of housing. The only demographic group which is growing on the Wirral, albeit that it's relatively small in terms of national comparisons, is the immigrant community.
That's right.
And one of the problems that we may have is that Wirralborough Council have been put under pressure to accommodate more legal and illegal immigrants, and it's been able to fend off that Home Office pressure for quite an amount.
Say we don't have the houses.
We haven't got the hotels and we haven't got the houses. Well, if you have to build 35,000 or now if you have to build 14,000 houses, that argument doesn't wash anymore. So they'll be able to say, well, okay, you've got your local plan, you're building 14,000 houses. Over the next few years, you're going to take however number it is.
And I mean, I think we've seen this at national level, that what they're quite doing quite deliberately is to take areas like ours, which are metropolitan borough councils, effectively, who have got a very low level of immigration.
We've got one of the lowest levels of immigration of any borough in England.
But they don't want to take the immigrants from, if you talk about the illegal immigrants to start with, they don't want to take them from the hotels where they currently are and put them into major cities.
No.
Because what you
they
get...
Fall up.
Yeah, and you get, and there's also, you get conflict. These people in major conurbations, in Liverpool, for example, they're not being required to take any more.
They've had a reduction in their housing targets. Places like Birmingham and London, they have had reductions in their housing targets.
Because they can see that the lack of social cohesion in the big cities is there.
But it's our turn now.
Yeah, but they don't see that lack of social cohesion in the more rural metropolitan areas.
No. I mean, if you look at North Cheshire, areas around there, areas in Cumbria and such like, they've all had their housing targets increased.
Hmm.
Now, that's not for local population.
No.
Because there's some of the demographic trends that we just talked about here are equally applicable in other parts, and yet their housing targets have been put through the roof.
Hmm.
And it's to accommodate immigration.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is that the only way, as I've said, that, you know, you can't economically build on the brownfield sites that we've got. So the only way that we're going to be able to build 35,000 new houses is by using the green belt, isn't it?
It will be, yeah. Yeah. We can delude ourselves to think that the green belt is sacrosanct, but it will get built on
and can be built on, because the planning officers can just override any objections.
I've not looked at all the small print of that, but it seems that way.
No, as I say, it got its second reading yesterday, so it's going to come.
Yeah,
it's just a question of when.
Yeah, but I think the argument from central government is that local planning rules and prejudices diminish the scope for housing development, which is true, to be honest.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was always very anti any kind of planning regulation. Yeah. I always thought it holds things back. Famously, if anybody coming to my door with a petition saying the guys across the road's building a block of flats, will you sign the petition to stop them? I would say no. Yeah. It's none of my business. But you know, I know I'm relatively unusual in that.
Well, I've seen planning applications go round and round and round and round for years. Mm. That clearly has an impact on the economic development of Wirral, and I think any developer coming onto the Wirral, knowing what a laborious planning process we've got, would probably go and build somewhere else. I would.
Yeah, quite right. Good. Well, look, I don't know where to go from here. I think we've got ourselves in this doom loop. I think it's not been a very cheerful podcast, has it?
Well, just getting back to what I was saying before, what I hope we have done really is illuminate some of the negative aspects of what's going on in Wirral, because most people don't know about these demographic changes. They don't know about the poor levels of unemployment and the welfare dependency and how indebted the council is. But financially, Wirral is not in a good place, and the councillors need to step up and realise that, and the officers in the council need to raise to the challenge. But
I think we both know none of that is going to happen.
In 12 months' time, we'll be sitting here, Ken, and we'll be having the same conversation. I guarantee you, and unless, of course, it won't happen this year, but in 2027, we'll have a different political complexion. Hopefully, there will be blood on the floor.
Hopefully, we'll have people, as you say, of the correct caliber to be able to carry the thing through. Yeah. So it's not just Britain that needs saved, is it? It's the world too.
It is, yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Good. Yeah. Well, thanks very much indeed for coming in. I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat, and I'm sure we'll be able to use some of this in our campaign to get reform into Wirral Borough Council.
Hopefully.
Thanks, Lyson.
Thanks.